And welcome to Stop the Presses. Your host, Mark Anderson, here on the 25th of March, a Monday, 2019. And if there ever was something that would be indicative of hell, this has always been a bit of an inside joke of mine. If you were in hell, then you'd see a calendar on the wall, and every day would be Monday, forever into the future. That's one definition of hell that I've often heard that's kind of laughable, but it has a certain truth about it and all that. But anyway, on a lighter, brighter note, I've got a special guest today, John Briggs. And John is coming to us from the UK. I want to make sure we're hearing each other. John, you out there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And everybody can too. So we've managed to make a successful Skype connection. John, ladies and gentlemen, is the author of a very fine and unusual book, a book that every family, and especially homeschooling families, but every family and many citizens should have, Alice and the Money Tree. Before I get into that, a couple quick announcements, and you're going to want to hear about this book today, ladies and gentlemen, and how to order it. A couple announcements. This coming Wednesday, the 27th of March, here on Stop the Presses, which, of course, is Monday, Wednesday, Fridays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central Time. This coming Wednesday, March 27th, Dr. Judy Wood, looking at not just the forensics on 9/11 at the World Trade Center that she analyzed in her book, Where Did the Towers Go?, but looking more broadly at problem solving in this age of social media and the internet, and how the mainstream media is so easily able to put one over on the people in terms of getting people to jump to conclusions, among other things. So Judy Wood, this coming Wednesday. This coming Friday, March 29, a guest host on here. He goes by the pen name Johnny Delirious. He is the master survivor, an expert at hair tissue mineral analysis, a very in-depth and instructive look at alternative health, a way to really measure just exactly what you should eat and what kind of supplements you should take, taking away the guesswork, and a number of other very keen insights this coming Friday with guest host Johnny Delirious, Master Survivor. News releases about Judy Wood this Wednesday and about Johnny Delirious this coming Friday are posted already on the republicbroadcasting.org website. And this coming Monday, and I believe without looking at the calendar, that's April 1st, I expect to have Ian Crane, also from the UK, and he's well known for looking into the down and dirty facts about fracking, but he also has an important conference that he's the founder of coming up, and that's in middle May. It's called AV10, which stands for Alternative View 10, coming up in the UK. So this coming Monday, a week from today, Ian Crane will tell us about that conference and his investigations into fracking. Now, without further ado, my guest for today here live the 25th of March is, as noted, John Briggs. And John, you put together this book, Alice and the Money Tree. Now, I found this book really, really fascinating, not only for what it says, but how it says it. It's written in a nursery rhyme style in most respects. And so there's lots of verse and rhyme, the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, and a number of other things, some very, very engaging illustrations and prose here. And what's really interesting is, as you look through it, it really gives you a memorable and fun way of learning the tricks of the debt merchants, the money masters, the money tricksters, and not only how they put one over on us monetarily, but turning us in the direction of what to do about it because of the trenchant and creative way that this book explains what the banksters actually do to society. So tell us a little bit, how long has this book been out, and what inspired you to put it together in the manner that you did?
Well, I think it was... I can't believe I was so ancient before I worked out how the world worked. And somebody began to explain a bit of it to me a few years ago, and I didn't get the whole picture, and I worried about it like a dog with a bone. And when the enormity of this ghastly scam, I understood it, I thought, I've got to do something about this. And, I mean, John Maynard Keynes, the famous economist, he sort of wrote the policies for most all sorts of governments all around the world, is on record of saying that governments extract the wealth of the population, and only one in a million will detect the theft. He's clearly telling us it's a crime, and nobody knows the crime is going on. So my mission in life to write this book was to somehow get under the radar with stories and a bit of verse, and to make it as short as I could so that you could sort of read it in half an hour, three quarters of an hour, with interesting pictures, almost comic style, if you like, almost like a comic, but to make it an easy read, because nobody wants to read difficult things, and nobody wants perhaps a finger prodded in their chest and to tell them what to, you know, what they should be thinking. And I thought this might, if you read a story, then you can perhaps get into somebody's consciousness. If you can get them interested in a story and deliver it in story form and in verse form, if it has a sort of a rhythm and a bit of poetry, and a bit, then it might have a better chance of hitting home than it's the best I've tried. It's almost impossible. This money scam is such an extraordinary fraud that the human brain can't take it in, because it is so simple, I think. So this is my attempt, and I have to say a number of people have read it, even merchant bankers, and come back and bought more and said that they worked for many years in the finance industry, and nobody ever explained to them how money worked. This is extraordinary. People actually in the business making serious money at this game for the financial industry don't actually know how it works. So that's the purpose of my book, and this is my mission.
That's very interesting. A quick footnote. You're from the UK. Did you work in any? Did you work in anything related to finance or insurance,
I was skiing about, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago. A woman standing next to me that I talked to, whose husband I think was something big in the city of London, said to me, "Money is debt. It doesn't really exist, and it disappears when it all gets paid." And none of it made sense, and so I sort of questioned her every morning about it, and that got my interest going with it, and I worried about it with a, you know, like a dog with a bone, and read as much as I could. And it's not easy to find. If you go into a bookshop in England and you look at a good bookshop, and you, this fraud is, it's, you know, in American, in modern speech, it's called loan sharking. Historically, it's usury.
Correct.
Officially, it's called fractional reserve banking. That's how they bury it in strange language, so that you don't understand what the fraud is. If you look in the backs of any book written on economics, you look in the index, you cannot find the phrase fractional reserve banking.
It's interesting. Yes.
Anyway, it's buried. I think there are gatekeepers out there in the, well, I have experience of it, in the bookshops, that will, it's a sort of censorship. They're sitting on this secret. And this, if we could only get everyone aware of this, all of their other crimes would crumble, because they haven't got a penny that haven't stolen from us with trickery and deception. And without their supply of our money, these people are powerless to do for all their other ghastly crimes and wars. So this is key.
Their supply of our money, that's really well put. You know, it is true. I study a lot as a writer and investigator into the use of language and the way that language and verbiage can be weaponized against the people, double meanings, all sorts of projection and conflation, and different techniques that are used to strategize with language to lure people off the scent of what's really happening. And I think that you're correct, John. I've been reading this book now. A quick footnote for the listeners out there live and on the archive is I was in the UK a year ago, this coming latter May, early June, and I talked to John Briggs, our guest today, on the phone. Unfortunately, we didn't get to meet yet, but we had a conversation. I got copies of his books, and I came to be aware upon talking to John and reading the books that this is a very creative way of getting the message out, starting with the young, starting with the fact that homeschooling families and really any families, youths and teens, anybody that's got the basic reading comprehension skills developed, no matter what age you are, is going to want to read this because of what John said. It's brevity. It has some entertainment value. It's fun to read, even though the content is sobering. And it's relatively brief. And that's important in this quick age of quick information on social media. People's attention spans have been dulled down. They don't read books like they used to at all, let alone, you know, whether the book is long or short. They don't read books hardly at all anyway. Austin, Texas tried to go to an all-digital library a few years back. Fortunately, that failed because I personally don't believe the printed word, that hard copy information should be completely bleeped out, although the powers that be would like to do that. But yes, John, it is a control system. And I've always compared it, tell me if you agree, I've always compared it to the magician's code. You know how magicians have a long time-honored code of silence not to tell how their tricks and illusions are done. I think that this, the banker's code, and their techniques is just about, if not equally, and possibly even more secretive than the magician's code.
Oh gosh, that's a great way to put it, Mark. That's I think that you hit the nail on the head there. It's astonishing how they managed to. This is such an extraordinary fraud, and it's so simple. But I struggle with ways to try and get this across to people. And I'm all the time trying to... This is my first attempt. And the problem is, I think the human problem is not so much these, you know, these ghastly people who are farming the whole world like battery hens. The problem is, humans can't understand the problem. It's the cognitive dissonance. That's what we've got to get through. If everybody understood this crime, the game would be over in very, very short order, because there are very few of these people involved in this criminal activity, and there's an awful lot of us. And if everyone knew about it, boy, so that's the trick. We've got to find out ways to get people to understand it. This is when I try to bring people to it now. The first thing I say is, Mr. and Mrs. Blackbird fell in love, and they do what everybody does that falls in love, and they look forward to the little flight. I think are blackbirds the same in America as they are in England? I know robins are different, but a blackbird in England is a small blackbird, and it has the most beautiful song of any of the birds, really. Anyway, the blackbirds, they were really happy. They looked forward to their little family arriving, and they built a nest. They got twigs, and they got bits of straw, and they smoothed it all down with mud, and they looked forward to the arrival of their little family. And they sang all day long, and of course one day four little eggs appeared. And they were so overjoyed, and they sang all day long, and gradually they began to hatch out. And then another egg appeared, and they weren't so good at maths, and it was a bit bigger than the others and slightly, you know, a different color. But they thought, well, perhaps they couldn't understand how it got there. And they hatched these eggs out, and one of the last ones to hatch out was the larger one. And this larger one was a huge great monster of a fledgling. And it kicked all the other ones out of the nest, and the other eggs hadn't been hatched yet. And the parent birds were, well, you could imagine, their family had been destroyed. They didn't know what to do. And then I say to people, you know, what was the problem? And they say it was the cuckoo. And I say, it isn't the cuckoo. It's cognitive dissonance. If they knew that was a cuckoo's egg, they would have kicked it out of... The blackbirds just couldn't believe that somebody could be so evil as to lay... as to...
Uh-huh. Keep going.
Yeah, okay, keep going. So, I try to get it to, this is how I get people to understand it's cognitive dissonance. And then the next thing I say is, I give them a parable. This is my next shot after my book. And this is the only other place I know that the parables are in the New Testament of the Bible. Well, this parable is the parable of the oil and the money. Now, oil and money, it's often said, are mediums. The oil lets all the moving parts in the car engine fly around. Without it, the car couldn't work.
Right.
The money is in the system, lets all the moving parts and all the trades happen within in the economy. So they're both similar. They both have the same function. They are both mediums. That's the first thing. The second thing is they both have a cost. You've got to get the oil out of the ground. You've got to transport it. You've got to refine it. You've got to put it in a can. It's got to be made for sale. It has a cost. You've got to pay. You've got to get it to acquire it. Similarly, the money. Now, the money is just a piece of paper, but it has a cost. It's got to be printed. So there's a cost there somewhere. And of course, most money are just keynotes on a computer, but someone's got to be paid to do it. So they're both a medium. They both have a cost to acquire. And then the third thing, totally similar in this way, they have to be introduced into the system. Now, how do you do this? You pour the oil into the car engine, and you put the treasury, pour the money, spend the money into the economy. Those three things exactly identical. Now then, if you went to a garage and you said, give me a gallon of oil, and the garage man said, there you are, sir, but next year, or the year after that, you've got to return the oil. And every month until you do, until the day you die and beyond, you've got to give me a pint of oil. You'd say, so long, pal, I'm going to find another garage. But then the garage man would say, well, you know, what's your problem? This is the way that you introduce money into your life. The problem is cognitive dissonance. Those two stories I'm trying to fit together, they're not finished yet, Mark, but this is my attempt when I try and talk to people in the pub to get them to understand how they are being together.
Yes, I want to interject. We got about a minute and a half before the first commercial break, John. A very interesting analogy. I would only add the caveat that oil in parallel would be more costly to get and refine and put on the market than money, and that's part of the scam, is that money, even though there is a cost with money, labor and a little bit of paper and ink, money is relatively and comparatively easy to introduce, which makes it all the more onerous that they want more money in return than they put into the system, which is the analogy that you used. You have to return oil rather than just simply receiving the oil you need at the amount you need. You have to actually return more than you actually receive. So that it's even more egregious when you consider that money is relatively cheap to make.
Absolutely.
And we'll continue on that train of thought with John Briggs here, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back right after these messages on Stop the Presses.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Welcome back to Stop the Presses here, 25 March 2019, continuing my conversation live here with my guest, John Briggs. His actual byline on his book, Alice and the Money Tree, J.M. Weston Briggs, to be exact. And John, you were talking before the break about meeting people in the pub or wherever you may go, and you're using the oil in the automobile analogy, and I added a little caveat in there. What is the typical reaction? I imagine you've had some breakthroughs. Have some people seen the light, or is the typical reaction denial, or is it mixed, or what have you had in terms of reactions?
Mark, it's always been a struggle, but I found those two stories, people like stories, actually hit home. So I find that works. And I take your point that actually nothing of minus value is actually loaned. I'll have to find a way of adding that to my story, but that's my best shot in the pub these days, and it seems to be working. And yeah. Because that's the trick. Somehow we've got to get people to wake up to this, you know, this cuckoo in the nest.
And, yeah, after the bottom of the hour, I want to actually read some passages from your book. This segment we're in right now, John, is a short segment. There's a few more ads and messages at the bottom of the hour in three or four minutes. So once we get into the next longer segment after the bottom of the hour, I want to read some passages. But so obviously the before and after you read this book, I'm just surmising here, you saw the need, you sensed the need for some sort of storytelling vehicle, some sort of storytelling tool, I should say, to get people to see the light and to make it engaging and not something that seems like drudgery or uphill battles to people. Again, in this day and age, we're being conditioned to want instant gratification, to want information right here, right now, just like we want our food. We don't want to cook food anymore. We want our food right here, right now. And so you're dealing with that too, short attention spans, generally speaking, some exceptions. And I'm glad to hear that you've had at least some breakthroughs. But as you said at the beginning of the show, it's such a monstrous problem that you hardly have a choice other than to use a tool like this, your book, Alice and the Money Tree. And when did the first printing of this book come out? When was it first printed? How long has it been circulating?
Well, I think it was last spring, about this time a year ago.
Oh, we're at the one-year anniversary. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it is about okay. that, yeah.
Okay, so I'm glad that we're hitting it on the head in that respect, that we're at the one-year anniversary. That's another milestone to announce on today's show here. And, you know, I found it very, very engaging. I gave one copy complimentary to a pastor friend of mine because he deals with a lot of youth, and I'm starting to spread the word a little more, and we'll talk a little more on the show later about how to get copies of your book, John. I want to ask you real quick, can people buy it directly from you retail, or can they buy it in bulk wholesale and then resell it? Is that allowable or doable?
Yeah, of course they can. I you know, I'm not in this for money, and I'm not in it for glory. I want people to wake up about this, and that's the purpose of it all. I don't. If they go on the website, you can get it, and I think I got somebody to list discounts for it. So, or if I haven't, I jolly well will, because people buy more than people have come back to me and said, look, I want more of this for my friends. What will you give me? And I say, okay, you order 5 and I'll send you 10. But I really need something listed on the website to be a little bit more accurate for that. Providing I can, I don't know how it works in American dollars. Over here, it's for sale for £9, 85, which is, you know, £10, and if I can sell two, if I can sell one of them, I can print another 2. That's what I do, and I have sold 500, and I've just ordered another 1,000 to be printed. And I have a few orders outstanding, waiting for this next batch to come through. It should be through this week, and it would be a wonderful thing if I could find a way of selling them in America. And as I say, all I want to do is recover my costs okay. and perhaps make a bit of profit so I can print some more. That's where it is with it. But it is such a problem, as we've discussed, to get people to pick up on this fraud. It's the old shell game, isn't it? It's like you might see 3 men from Eastern Europe on Westminster Bridge with 3 coconut shells, and there's a bead underneath, and everyone's paying £20 to guess where it is, and they never guess it right. It's just like that. It's a, as you said, Mark, it's a conjuring trick. And you cannot understand. It's hard to get people to understand how the conjuring trick works. Like most conjuring tricks, it's so simple. If you actually know how they work, they're so dead easy. There's nothing complicated in them. It's fraud. It's fraud. It's interesting that you were talking to a pastor about this. I went to, I don't know how long I have to talk before the thing comes on, but I can tell you that
we got about a minute, if that, John. So yeah, be concise.
Okay.
But here comes the music now. Save that thought, John, for after the messages, and then we'll get into the actual content of the book itself a little bit.
Okay,
stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after these messages here on Stop the Press.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion.
Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Returning to Stop the Presses, 25 March 2019, your host Mark Anderson coming to you live today. Quick announcements again, Dr. Judy Wood this coming Wednesday here in Stop the Presses, 2 p.m. Central. Guest host this coming Friday, Johnny Delirious, as he's known as. And a week from today, Ian Crane, who's known for investigating fracking and is having the notable AV10, Alternative View 10 conference coming up in May in the UK. And my guest from the UK today, as noted, John Briggs. John, thanks for taking the first half hour to explain kind of the why, what your concerns were and the why of writing this book, Alice and the Money Tree, and the concerns that you've long had and how this book attempts to address those concerns by getting people to understand mankind's greatest scam, and that is the debt merchants, the money scam. It's known by so many names and monikers. When I look at the book itself, it's very engaging, and you can read some of these passages too, John. It's certainly not totally up to me, but I'm just going to read you a couple of my favorites. I love the beginning. Illiteracy, that curse of old, kept the people poor and cold. Now ignorance of cash is used to keep the silly geese confused. That's very, very poetic, and it's very, very truthful. You there, John?
Yes, I am. Well,
We had a little background noise. I'm sorry. Sometimes Skype gets a little choppy, so.
Forgive me. I didn't realize that. I would just put a glass of water down. Mark, I picked that up, if you like, from Ezra Pound.
Yes, the noted poet who was a social creditor in terms of reform, yes.
Yes. He said that somewhere, you know, in the past, people couldn't read and write. And he compared that with the same way that people are totally illiterate about money and how they're being conned by this awful system. And of course, Mark, it's not just that all of their wealth is being extracted, and it's just the terrible things that come with it. With the system, you've got to have growth. If you don't have growth, you collapse like Greece. And then, if you've got to pay back more than you borrow, not that they actually loan you anything more than handfuls of nothingness or great vast amounts of nothingness, if you've got to pay back more than you borrow, the only way you can do it is keep growing. So what we've got in UK is there's no room in the hospitals, there's no room in the prisons, there's no room on the roads, who'd be going on the motorways at the weekends. They've even got rid of the hard shoulders. They are called smart motorways now. So if you break down, there's nowhere to stop. I don't know if they're doing this in America yet, but it's clearly a panic measure. You're told that somebody's watching you on a computer and they can see if you break down. What a terrifying thing if you're flying along at 50 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour, and a tire blows out. Where are you going to go? It enforces growth in everything, which makes misery everywhere.
Yes, you're absolutely right, John. It's growth for its own sake, growth for the sake of growth. If an economy is in equilibrium, as Ezra Pound would have agreed, and C.H. Douglas, and many of the people involved in the Chartist movement in the UK, yeah, and those, a little bit of variance and pluralism in their views of what to do about the money problem, but they all would have more or less agreed that the system induces criminal behavior because there's always a shortage of money compared to the prices and debts out there. So if there's always a shortage of money in the economy, it's like playing musical chairs. Some people are always going to be left standing. And when they realize, when they sense in their gut, they may not know the details, but when they sense in their gut it's a fraud, it's going to drive a lot of people into crime and antisocial behavior. At the top levels, that means war. War is one of the only ways to keep production going because the system is so defective, it will crash upon itself if war and other large-scale endeavors are not brought about. And as you're indicating, John, that means growth for its own sake, that if the economy is not arbitrarily pumped up to make products no one wants, to create jobs no one needs, to make factories making things that have no earthly purpose just to keep cranking out production so they can keep paying meager wages that never keep up with the prices anyway, and we have to constantly extract natural resources to build things we don't need, to fight wars that make no sense, all to keep the machine from falling on its face, and that means growth for its own sake. But that also can mean, as you say, stupid efficiency measures like making roads narrower, getting rid of shoulders on our roads, actually making travel more dangerous just to keep this economic system, which is completely defective, afloat. And so growth for its own sake comes into play. You're absolutely right.
That was wonderfully put, Mark. And going back to wars, gosh, if you've got a... an unstoppable fountain of money drifting into your hands, and everybody else is in penury and gagging for it, then you have control over everybody. You control all of the information from Hollywood to the schools. Everyone's in your pocket. And what a wonderful incentive to get a war going. I suspect in 1914, for instance, I bet if they had a referendum, nobody in Britain would have volunteered to start a war and go murdering Germans, and similarly in Germany. But if you could use your influence, and you have control over people.
Correct.
What a wonderful incentive. Because then, although nothing's actually loaned, all of the wealth of the country, all of the treasure has to be yielded up to pay for the war and for the fighting, for the destruction. And then after the war, the reconstruction of it all. What a nice little earner if you can somehow get a war going. What a brilliant thing. I read somewhere that the national debt in Britain was 650 million in 1914, and it was 7,900 million in 1918, and the portion of the budget just to pay the interest on this fictitious loan was 40% of the budget in 1919. Now, all the wealth of this very wealthy country then, in the early part of this last century, all disappeared like water into the sand. And not just this country, all over Europe, all that treasure disappeared, or did it? Or did it just change hands?
Correct, yeah. And then they engineered the Treaty of Versailles. They guaranteed terrible reparations against the Germans, setting the stage for World War II. And then when you look at the whole nine yards, for instance, the Daily Mail would run fictitious stories of, in World War One, prior to World War One, of German soldiers bayoneting Belgian children, and looking like they were making a shish kebab with their bayonets with the Belgian children stabbed all the way through, impaled on their bayonets. And the Daily Mail would run these stories deliberately lying to make people think that the Germans were beasts so as to beat the war drums. We won't get into that too much, but that's what the Daily Mail did as I looked into that. But, John, feel free to read any passages from your book while we have some time here that you may want to. But the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, I love how it starts. "Money doesn't grow on trees," said Alice. "Of course it does," retorted the March Hare scornfully. "Money is paper, and paper is made from trees. Everybody knows that." "Then how does it come to us?" asked Alice. "You stupid child," snapped the Mad Hatter. "The Bank of Wonderland presides over money creation. First it declares the value, then it is lent out at interest." "Why does the bank declare that?" Alice asked. "You must be very dull to ask that," replied the March Hare. "All kingdoms must do this. How else do you think the population can buy and sell things?" The Dormouse briefly woke at this point and immediately fell asleep again. "So if it is borrowed at interest, who pays it back?" asked Alice. "Why, the population," retorted the March Hare with an exasperated sigh. "You seem to have a very poor understanding of the simplest things." There's that word, simple. "Well, who gets the interest when it's paid back?" asked Alice stubbornly. "The men who create and lend the money, of course," snapped the March Hare. "How else do you think they are able to buy their yachts and castles and all the kingdom's treasure?" And it goes on like that. And it's got these very cute, engaging Alice in Wonderland style illustrations, ladies and gentlemen. And it's an ideal book for homeschoolers, church groups, really anybody of any age who has the basic reading literacy to then acquire the other kind of literacy that my guest John Briggs has talked about sorely lacking in the world today, and that is financial and monetary literacy. So that's how the book starts out, John. Have you got any other passages that you'd especially like to recite by chance? Or
you read it much better than I ever could. You choose one.
Okay, let's go with, "Oh, tell me the truth about cash." And I'm just going around randomly here in this book that is, bear with me, only about 57, 58 pages, ladies and gentlemen. "Oh, tell me the truth about cash. Is it only just simply a token to buy things we need to and stash? How on earth would we get on without it? Please tell me the truth about cash. Could buttons be used for this purpose, or tally sticks fashioned from ash? Or if we say the object has value, oh, please tell me the truth about cash. Who is it that chooses its value? Does the queen dream it up in a flash? Is it pulled from a hat like a rabbit? Please tell me the truth about cash. Does it spring from the air like a phantom when our fingers when our fingers computer keys bash? Do they know when enough has been printed? Oh, tell me the truth about cash. And the money to pay for our projects," there we go, "all over the country to splash. Must we borrow these tokens from bankers? Oh, please tell me the truth about cash. When these tokens are seized by our taxes, causing everyone's teeth much to gnash, why use them to feather bed bankers? Oh, tell me the truth about cash. Is the central bank subject to no one? Would to question it prove very rash? Why is Parliament deaf on this subject? Oh, please tell me the truth about cash. If the banks produce money from nowhere, how much would their profits be dashed? Should the nation take over this function?" Good question right there. "Oh, tell me the truth about cash." Going on, what on earth would we do with the money, not to mention the interest we'd slash or omit? Would our days then forever be sunny? Oh, please tell me the truth about cash. If, like Lincoln, that's Abraham Lincoln, we cut out the bankers, would it certainly lead to a clash? And for this have so many been murdered? Question mark. Oh, do tell me the truth about cash.
You read that beautifully.
Now, that says so much. Now, they're talking about Lincoln coming from an American perspective. That, of course, is basically what I am. I'm a greenbacker. I don't believe we need a gold standard. The price of gold is decided by the City of London. is decided by bankers. Gold standards sound romantic. They sound workable. I don't believe they'd work anymore, at least.
I do agree.
The amount of money, the money would be produced interest-free by the government according to a constitutional guideline. And from what I'm understanding, it would be produced with all of production, all of raw material wealth and productive capacity behind it, not simply one precious metal like gold, but the productive capacity and raw material wealth and capital wealth of the country behind it. And the amount of money would be geared to the GDP that that can produce. And it wouldn't be too much or too little, so as to achieve, like a steam valve, the right equilibrium. That's always what I've understood. This book may or may not address those specifics. I haven't read it all the way through in a couple of months. But this Oh, Tell Me the Truth About Cash hit on the Lincoln Greenback thing. It hit on the fact that why is Parliament deaf on this subject? And let's go there, John, with about 4 minutes before the next break. Other than the Bradbury Pound movement in the days of World War I in Parliament, now I understand there's a remembrancer, someone that from the central banking cartel that overwatches Parliament and on a daily basis wears the ceremonial wig, actually oversees Parliament. Is Parliament basically, how would you say, paralyzed from doing anything about this? They know about it, but they can't act, or are they just as ignorant about monetary matters as the rest of us?
Well, Mark, history, as I'm sure you know, proves that it can be very dangerous for your health if you bring up this subject in the wrong place. And the Treasury issuing the money rather than borrowing it, although nothing's really, I mean, the way that it works is that the government go to the, or the Treasury, go to the Bank of England or to the Federal Reserve and say, we've got all this cash coming in from our taxes. Please loan us some money. There's nothing in the bank account, in the checking account of the Bank of England. They write a check out and they're, with a double entry bookkeeping logic, if you can,
right.
if people can understand this, they say this check we're writing, well, there's nothing to back it up, is underpinned because it's underpinned with this IOU that we've got from the Treasury. That's how is how the scam originates. And then when this money, 10% of the money, which is borrowed into circulation or nothingness is borrowed into circulation. When it goes into the government banks, it gets spent on the, you know, the army and the health service. And of course, all money will hit the bank eventually. And then the high street banks use the same fraudulent process to create the other 90% of money, which is in circulation. It's a sort of two-stage system, and it has two purposes. The first purpose is it's a control mechanism. It controls the whole of humanity, because if you've got loads of money and everybody else is in penury, you have control over them. So it's a great control mechanism. The other, you don't need a standing army to do this. People enslave themselves because they're defrauded. And the other purpose is to hoover out all of the wealth globally. It's a two function.
That is a pretty good way of describing it. Absolutely. It's a double whammy. It's pretty much the same here. And one point before the break I want to make very quickly is that it's not so much the fiat, ladies and gentlemen. It's not creating the money from nothing that's so much the problem. Governments, if they did it constitutionally, would do basically the same thing. What matters is it's privatized and interest is charged in such a fraudulent and deceptive manner and in a way that steals the entire wealth of the world. It's really the interest and the usury and the manipulation involved. It's not so much the create money from nothing. You have really no choice but to create money from nothing. Money has to be created somehow, and it would be created by governments constitutionally, if not issued by the bankers. And so it's not so much how it's issued, it's who's issuing it and under what terms. But at any rate, here come the important messages. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Stop the presses. On March 25th, 2019, coming to you live, your host, Mark Anderson. We've been speaking with John Briggs, and John is the author and creator of Alice and the Money Tree, brought out a year ago. We're celebrating the one-year anniversary of this fine, you could call it children's book, but really for anyone that wants an entertaining and engaging way to understand the great world money scam. And John, I have your website here. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's themoneywonderland.com. Repeat, themoneywonderland.com. And people can go there to order copies. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mark.
Yes, and the email, ladies and gentlemen, and this will be posted on the archive link after the show. The email, and John, again, correct me if there's anything wrong, it's themoneywonderland@gmail.com. Again, themoneywonderland, all one word, @gmail.com. And as John has noted, the book, you can inquire about quantity purchases. I want to note that I do have 3 new copies here in the States. I may have more in my file. If anyone wants to get a hold of me through RBN, they are welcome to, and I can sell you an initial copy for a discount just to get the book circulating a little, and more copies then could be purchased through John. So there are a very limited number of copies available here in the States. Again, get a hold of me through the station. John, any final comments? We're in the last segment, which goes kind of quick. Any summarizing remarks you might want to make about the book?
the first thing I'd say, Mark, is what a super radio show you've got.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, well, it's the first time I've come to it. So the one thing I will quickly say is the gold question is addressed in this book and made very clear that it's a cul-de-sac. Gold is not the answer at all. It's just a confusion. I'll just say that quickly.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing for some of us to hear because we've been kind of given this Ludwig von Mises Austrian school alternative. I believe there's sufficient evidence to say that that is a deliberately planted false alternative to the Keynesian school, and that both the Keynesian and the Austrian schools are both the wrong turns in the road, and that the answer is different than that. And it has to do, again, along the lines of what you're trying to very engagingly tell in this book, Alice and the Money Tree.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, Aristotle addressed this problem thousands of years ago. Was it 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago plus? Made it quite clear that money is declared legal tender by the sovereign state, by the government, and it's not something you can mine or farm. It's a token to be used to be a token for value. That's its purpose. Simple. Once you give it the value of something that's been mined, and the value of gold production cannot keep up with human expansion. And that's probably enough of that. I better not go on too long about that. But the system of the not borrowing money into existence has been widely, historically, and very successfully done everywhere. There's many instances of it.
Thanks, John. We're going to have to end on that note. I want to thank everyone for listening live and on the archive with me interviewing John Briggs. Expect this one to be rebroadcast at some time for its very trenchant value in addressing this universal problem. Thanks for listening. We'll see you Wednesday with Dr. Judy Wood here on Stop the Presses. Have a good afternoon.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.